We're not done with foraging for food because for dessert.
Sure.
Flora Lichtman is here, and she's got you want a lesson in how to forage for food in the most unusual place. Flora has got it this week, right?
Yes. We looked at foraging in New York. I mean, everyone knows New York is a place where you can find food, right? But you can also find food in New York,
nice.
If you know
nice.
What I mean.
Yes.
Thanks.
Yes, very
this
nice.
Is radio. Anyway, so we looked at a few different foragers, sort of case studies in foraging. And you can find mushrooms in the park, and we talk about that, and sea rocket at the beach, which is in the mustard family.
Sea rocket.
Yeah. Punch up your sandwich
wow.
when you're picnicking. One unusual foraging case study was Ari Glogauer. He was looking for snails in his backyard.
Mm-hmm.
Escargot. Local
Escar
to Brooklyn.
Went. No,
yeah.
no, Escar.
And the stars of our video this week really are Anya Pozdeva and Christopher Toole. And they're vertically integrated farms. And they have this interesting story. They were in finance and traded their jobs for a new mission. They want to turn New York into a food production center. Basically, through a whole bunch of different means. So they're growing tilapia at a community center in the Bronx and in their apartment, I should
also
say.
Yeah.
And in other people's apartments. We visit another apartment in the Bronx and see some tilapia.
Mm-hmm.
They're foragers. In fact, one of their recipes is garlic mustard, which you can find. It's an invasive. It's all over. Check out the video. You can see what it looks like. You can turn it into pesto, it turns out.
Is that right?
Yeah. I had it raw
right.
on our shoot. It was actually pretty good.
Yeah, and what's also interesting is that they have gone to the parks here in New York and sort of like Johnny Appleseed, Johnny
yes.
something.
Johnny
Planter.
Johnny Food Farmer
food
in the
farmer.
City.
Is it his secret that they're, well, not anymore. You've got them on video planting in the park system here.
Yeah, this idea really captured my imagination. The idea is to turn New York City's parks sort of clandestinely into edible forests, food forests.
Hmm.
So we were in Van Cortlandt Park in the Bronx, and if you walk through with Anya and Christopher, they can show you their secret spots where they've planted blueberry bushes and raspberry bushes. And when I was there with them, they were sort of turning a hill that was a little bit hard to get to, was sort of a treacherous chute into a lavender grove.
Okay.
Which was really neat. And so I asked, you know, the first question that came to my mind was like, aren't you going to get in trouble?
Sure.
What
sure.
do the parks say about this?
You see a guy with his cop with his baton there.
Yeah, exactly. And they said that.
Sure, you're planting food here? Yeah, right. We've heard it all, you know.
But their point of view is that it's a public park, and they've talked to the park rangers, and they said, you know, if you saw a pumpkin growing, would you smash it? And, of course, the park ranger said, no, you know, we wouldn't do that. So their idea is you're adding biodiversity to the park, and especially if you plant local things that are endemic, like a blueberry bush, you know, what's the harm
what's the
done?
Harm? Yeah.
So it was an interesting idea.
Yeah.
And if you go to Van Cortlandt Park, you might be able to score some berries also.
But, you know, this stuff grows wild in all the different parks, right?
That's right.
And there are these people, I'm sure people like them, must be spread out all over the country.
I think so. I wonder if this is a sort of secret underground move. Anyway, that's their goal.
That's their goal.
And, you know, they also sort of give foraging tips. And they wouldn't say, just go pick anything you see, you know, they're
right.
experts.
Right. As our food people said
that's
before,
right.
you have to know what a raspberry really looks
yeah,
like.
Yeah. This is not, Science Friday is not encouraging people to just go out and just start, like,
stay
filling a bag.
Stay away from those mushrooms.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Unless these are
you
professionals.
Know. That's right. They,
you know?
People are professionals. And when I was walking around with Anya, you know, she just knew, she had a very deep knowledge of the plants and how to prepare them. So, you know, Artemisia, you know, you might see it. You don't want to eat it raw. You want to turn it into a tea. But I didn't know that until I had an expert with me to explain.
Yeah. So Flora went up there into Vancouver Park and
Van Cortlandt.
Excuse me. I said Vancouver. We're talking about Vancouver all
yeah,
day.
Yeah.
Van Cortlandt Park and You took your video camera and they showed you the stuff that they were collecting, but it's not a lesson in identifying the plant. It's a lesson in what you can do with the park.
Yeah.
So if you really want to identify the stuff, you need a real manual. You need to know what you're doing.
Go get a field guide. Find someone who knows.
Right.
Yeah. But you can see this is sort of how people who are foraging, you know, how they're doing it.
All right. Thank you, Flora.
Thanks,
Ira. It's up there on our website at sciencefriday.com. It's a great little video, and if you're into it, it's really something you might want to do. Next up, mosquitoes, chicken pox, cheap wool. People can name 100 things that make them itchy, but no one can tell you why. It's had scientists scratching their heads for years. Has it got you scratching yours? Studies showed it just by listening to, say, a radio broadcast talking about certain uncomfortable sensations could have you squirming in your seat, fighting to scratch that itch already, yeah? On the phone is Mark Abrams, editor for the Annals of Improbable Research, who's going to tell us why you may already feel like scratching. Welcome to Science Friday, Mark.
Hi, Ira. Are you scratching?
I'm wondering, how many people are out there? Is the power of suggestion, does it work in scratching?
That was the big question. Scratching and itching are really mysterious. For as long as people have been digging into the nervous system, trying to figure out how the brain and the nerves work, they've been looking at itching and scratching as great mysteries. There have been lots of explanations, but nobody really knows how they work. And there have been, in the past 15 years, two studies that got at the big question of how much of this can happen just by suggestion.
Hmm. And in other words, if we get a group of people together and sort of suggest something that's scratchy, they'll start itching?
Yeah. So there was one study that was done about 10 years ago in Germany. They invited a lot of people to come to a movie theater. They were told that this was going to be filming a TV show. And they were shown first a bunch of slides of things that were thought to induce itching. They weren't told to itch or anything, but they were just shown these things. And then after that, they were shown a bunch of other slides of things like babies and soft down and soft skin that were thought to make people relax and be not itchy. What was really going on was the TV cameras were focusing on the audience, and they were recording the audience. And afterwards, the scientists had a bunch of people look at the videotapes and try to very carefully take records for each person in the audience of how often they scratched. And what they found, they say, is that while watching those slides of really itch-inducing things, people did scratch themselves a lot more. And then when they started to see the slides of nice, soft babies and things, they stopped scratching to a degree. So that was one experiment. About 5 years before that, in the U.S., at Indiana State University, there was a guy named Mitchell who was working on his Ph.D. dissertation, and he, on the surface, was interested in subliminal suggestions. You know those old stories about you go to a movie theater and they've stuck in these real quick flashes of words that say, buy popcorn. And the old stories are that people would rush out and buy popcorn. And nobody's sure that ever happened. So he was trying to look at this. And he got itching and scratching involved because he wanted some way that was inarguably evidence. And so he prepared some audio tapes. And one audio tape had subliminal messages of scratching, people saying scratch and itch and things like that. But the words were recorded so softly nobody could detect them, nobody could hear them. And then they put some music on top of that. So that was one group of people listened to that tape. Second group of people listened to a tape of just the music with no subliminal suggestions. And then a third group listened to a tape that had just somebody overtly saying itch and scratch. And the results came out not what they expected exactly. Results came out on the subliminal tape, almost nobody was itching. And most people were itching on the tape that had just music. And not so many were itching on the tape that was telling you to itch. So it was quite mysterious. And the result of both of these things, when you add them together, is that it's pretty much where people started. Nobody really understands a whole lot about how itching ties in with suggestions. Now, this sounds like funny stuff, and probably is, but on the other hand, there are a lot of people who suffer from itching, And it can be a terrible, horrible thing that goes on and on and can ruin people's lives. And doctors really, for the most part, don't know what to do about that.
Interesting. Talking with Mark Abrams on Science Friday from NPR about studies about itching and scratching. One other study that is interesting, and I'm itching right now. I wonder how many other people are itching as we're talking.
I don't intend to make you too much more uncomfortable, Ira, but could you tell me exactly where on your body you are itching?
I'm itching on my back. My back.
Okay. There's an experiment that was done recently. It was published just a few months ago, and it was done in, I think, four different countries, in the UK, Saudi Arabia, the United States, and Singapore, I think, was the fourth one. And they were scratching people, and they were trying to figure out, you know, there's some pleasure involved,
right?
It can be when you finally do scratch. So they were trying to measure that part of it. So they had some people who were trained to do the scratching using special brushes, and they would have them scratch on three different body parts. And periodically they would ask the person who was being scratched to indicate, a scale of 1 to 9, I think, how pleasurable it was. And what they ended up discovering, they said, was this really is very different on different body parts. They measured the forearm, the back, and then they also scratched on people's ankles. And they found that there is a great amount of pleasure initially when you start scratching any of those places. But the only place they found where the pleasure keeps on, you can keep scratching for a long time and it stays pleasurable, is on the ankle.
Wow. Oh.
And nobody really knows why.
You can scratch. In other words, you can satisfy the itch on the back and the arm, but you can keep scratching your ankle and it still feels good.
Yeah, so exactly that. The first two, you satisfy it, but it's just satisfied. The third one, you're getting some pleasure. And also, nobody really has any clear idea whether this is tied to something important or trivial or what. It's really a deep mystery.
Wow, so scratch, so... your feet are near the ground, right? You'd think that they would be abrasive things down there that make you want to scratch.
Yeah.
So maybe your ankles, maybe that's the pleasurable part of, I'm just guessing.
You can. The more you think about it, the more you can start to think of all kinds of interesting experiments you could do. And people have done a lot of them. It's just nobody really seems to have done many experiments that told them anything very definite. They always end up going in a circle with just, the only way to put it is scratching your head about how does this stuff work.
Yeah. You know what they say, you're going to need an ocean of calamine lotion. What?
Some of them say that, yeah.
All right, Mark. That's very interesting. Thank you. Thank you for enlightening us about scratching and itching. And now I'm squirming. So
good luck, Ira.
Thanks a lot. Mark Abrams is editor and co-founder of the Annals of Improbable Research, as well as founder and master of ceremonies for the Ig Nobel Prize. That you can hear that those ceremonies every Friday, the Friday after Thanksgiving, right here on Science Friday. And he also writes a weekly column for The Guardian. Greg Smith composed our theme music, and we had help today from NPR librarian Kim Oleski. If you missed any part of the show today, maybe you want those recipes or hear more about it, go back to our website, and you can listen to our podcasts on iTunes also, and also you can take them along with you on your iPhone and Android apps, and we'll be talking all week about them on Twitter. And then we got the recipes still up there on our website at sciencefriday.com. And it's our new, holy smokes, it's our new revamped website at sciencefriday.com. All kinds of new stuff on there. It looks totally different, and hopefully we've made it more inviting and more sociable to you to stay there and browse a while. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.